Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
They Promised Trees by Elad Haber, with music by Fall Precautions. Read by Jean-Paul Garnier. When the travelers came, they promised trees. All I've ever known is the barren and storm-ravaged landscape of my world. Thick dust and the gray hulks of trees, long dead. We built narrow homes of mud and stone. They watched in silent judgment when the travelers asked us to assemble. I stayed near the house I shared with my mother. They built a metal stage where they could speak to the town and set up some chairs as if this was a wedding. They called themselves teachers. "But we are not traditional educators," said their leader, a tall man with a bald head in a dark blue jumpsuit. "We educate planets. We know what a planet needs to survive, and we can help it using technology. In your case," he pressed a hidden button and a green-tinted projection of a forest appeared around us. "You need photosynthesis. You need a functioning biosphere. You need trees. We can help. We can rewind the planet's history to remember a time when there was abundant life here." Whispers from the assembled crowd, some smiles. I watched it all, cautious and suspicious. The teacher continued. "In order to facilitate the change, the planet will need to be evacuated of all human life." He pointed up. "You will stay on one of our orbitals while your planet undergoes its treatment. Once it's done, you will return, and you will be amazed." There was a lot of chatter, but no one spoke up. Then my mother rose. She was the town's mayor. She wore her work overalls, muscles showing over plaid short sleeves. Her tone was not friendly. "You want us to abandon our homes and trust strangers with our entire world?" The teachers whispered among themselves, but had no ready response. "I'm not going anywhere," my mother said through gritted teeth, and stomped off back to our house. The eyes of the town followed her, and then settled on me. I escaped inside. Of course, the offer was too good to pass up. I watched from the lone window of my house as the meeting continued for hours after my mother's departure. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but they seemed to come up with an agreement. The townspeople looked excited, except when they glared at my house. The next morning, a small assemblage gathered and demanded to speak to my mother. She came downstairs carrying a shotgun. She wore her farm clothes as if this was just a normal day, and she was already late to the fields and annoyed by it. She handed me the weapon. It was her grandfather's, stowed away in secret to this world. There were boxes of bullets hidden somewhere under the house. Outside, the discussion got heated. The lead teacher came over and tried to lower the temperature. He spoke for a while, gesturing at the sky. I had never been so uncomfortable in my life. The suit pressed in on me as if it was trying to squeeze every inch of my body. My mother towered over me in her suit. The helmet was made of clear glass with small lights inside of it, shadowing her features. Our house was swarming with the travelers. They placed small devices near the windows. The tall leader with the bald head approached my mother and asked her one last time to reconsider. My mother responded, "No." He looked at me. "At least let me take your daughter off world. It's not safe for her here." She was fiddling with something on the front of the suit. "She can make her own choices." The man crouched next to me. "Do you hear that, little one? You can come with us if you want. And if everything goes according to plan, your mother will be right here waiting for you." I swallowed. "No," I echoed. The man rose. "Okay then," he sighed. "As we've said, there's no guarantee the suits will protect you. They have never been tested for this kind of exposure." My mother didn't acknowledge the warning or didn't care. "Good luck," he said, then left. Outside, a dust storm raged. The empty world around us screamed with roaring and whistling wind. I stared out the window as it started. The wind, blowing at the town with strong gales, paused for a moment and then began flowing backwards. Then it sped up, building momentum until the whole world became blurry. The dust-caked sky lightened, grew bright, and became a shocking, blinding blue. Brown trunks rose from the ground, topped with growing green canopies. "It's working," I shouted. I looked behind me for my mother. She was on the floor, clutching her metallic chest. I rushed over to her. The lights on her helmet were a sickening red. There was a hiss coming from her suit. She grabbed my hand and tried to say something, but the words were lost in her throat. I watched in horror as her body twisted and pulled at itself, contorting with the effects of time gone awry. I looked away. When I looked back, there was nothing in the suit but ash. After a lifetime, I stood up and walked outside. The world was new, lush and green. Trees as far as I could see. I shed my suit. Even the air tasted different. The sun felt strange and hot on my bare skin. The townspeople were returned to the surface and the travelers left, their altruistic mission accomplished. When the hunters came, they hid in the trees. The town's new mayor, a stocky man with frightened eyes, ran to my house. "We need to get out of here," he shouted. "It's not safe." I went upstairs and grabbed my grandfather's shotgun. It was still loaded. The barrel was rusty and old, but I could clean it. I would find more bullets later. I settled onto a chair near the window. I'm not going anywhere. Story That Never Was by Brent A. Harris, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Damn. I have a story to write. An idea nibbling my brain, searching for escape. But I hate the blank page. It evokes a deep fear inside of me. Every damn time. The fear of the unknown. The fear of failure. The vexing voice that whispers, "Stop." I shake my head and rattle loose a few thoughts. There, The blank page is gone. I've created an island in a sea of white. I sit and stare at the oasis. I frown. The screen screams with strange symbols that don't capture the truth of my thoughts. My words are reduced to nothing more than ones and zeros. They hold no power, no meaning to me. Like the wave that erases footprints in the sand, I delete them. A blank page greets me once more. Shit. The story I want to write is unusual. An openness I've not tried before. This story is one of alternate history. Change one thing in the past and a new future emerges. What I will change remains unknown. Some stories are discovered word by word. I sit and think, then peck at the keyboard. The words I write are safe from annihilation, for now. First things first, I need to lighten this dour tone. To do that, I will need some assistance. A voice breaks the silence. It asks, "Don't you need a plot first? An idea?" I look around. I'm alone except for my laptop, a cup of cold coffee, and a finger or two of Jim Beam. It's not unusual for me to be alone, nor is it unusual to hear words in the stillness of solitude. "I'll decide the plot later," I answer the void. Was there a character there already forming, emerging from the shadows, each clack of the keyboard birthing it into existence? I'm a lazy writer. I'll create a character, stick them into a complicated situation, and let them lift the heavy boxes from there. In truth, this is a lie. I hate my characters changing my story. This attempt at writing something unknown is strange, new territory. I'm frightened of the idea of what my characters will create. Yet, isn't that the idea? In alternate history, a single change creates a whole new world. So why not let my characters create chaos and see what happens? "Let me out, and I can create the world you deserve." The voice again. I'm not sure what it's saying. I must draw the voice out further, for they alone will help me finish this story. I begin by discovering this new creation's name. Ted emerges from the nothingness. Soon, he takes shape. Sandy hair, hazel eyes. He's tall with a frame for muscles if he chose to hit the gym with a slight pudge perfected from pounding down a few too many pints. A second-hand suit from a used car salesman completes the look. "Hello there," he says. No, too friendly. I need him to be something else. "How are you doing, Ted?" Ted nods. Ah, this revision shifts Ted into a character of few words. That should be interesting to write. But Ted is here, for better or worse. Something tells me to be wary. Now to thrust Ted into some sort of setting. In the case of alternate history, the question is, when? Ted answers. Precisely. When is crucial. Too far back and it's difficult to assess the change in present day. Too recent and it's difficult to gain a historical perspective. Then you must consider the audience. You write about dinosaurs, you'll get different readers than if you wrote about the Boxer Rebellion. I'd like one of those elusive larger audience for this story, so perhaps I'll pen a story about baseball, boobs, and beer. Was that an attempt at humor? Ted facepalms. I have a few ideas. Oh? Might I suggest the tried-and-true trope of going back to the Civil War? Change something there? What would be the point of changing that? And what could we possibly change that hasn't been done before? Ted reflects. Someone picks up Lee's lost letters? You mean Order 191? Yeah, that's been done, and it didn't end well. They ended up with an authoritative regime. Are you sure you're not getting that confused with our timeline? Touché. Fine, Ted grunts. Give the Confederates AR-15s via time-traveling terrorist. You read too much, Turtle Dove. Ted leans against a library shelf that spawns into existence. His finger runs across a row of old leather-bound books.
What about World War II?
What? Are there no other eras than those two in alternate history? Fine, the Revolutionary War. A bunch of modern-day cadets search for a misplaced M16 in British hands, cross the Delaware with George Washington. Are you sure you're not an Amazon affiliate? Besides, the British had superior firepower anyway, and could have outstripped the colonials even more if they had adopted the Ferguson rifle. Ted's hazel eyes glare at me. Quit trying to plug books you haven't even finished writing yet. Fair. But what's with the big idea of sending modern-day stuff back in time? Don't blame me, I'm just a literary byproduct. Oh, that reminds me. What about an Imitz-class aircraft carrier sent back to World War II? No. A whole island in a sea of... Don't you dare complete that sentence. Can we send a DeLorean into the 50s? No. A Connecticut Yankee or an enterprising archaeologist goes back in time? Wait a minute. Now, just wait a minute. Cut that out. Yes? Ted taps his foot, his arm folded. Look, whatever we decide to do, I want to focus my story on an individual or a group of people that make different choices than what happened in real life. It doesn't have to be about war or guns or old white men with guns. Alternate history can be about art, science, religion, family, or love. All we need to do is alter what really happened in our timeline. History hangs on a choice. You mean a stupid choice, Ted says. History is a string of stupidity. Well, that's a bit reductionist. And I don't think people are all that. Civilization sprang out of a farmer's field fallowed for fermenting beer. History is basically one big bender. We stumble from one drunken decision to the next with a few buzzed 3 a.m. booty calls thrown into the mix. As a writer in the genre, I'm surprised you possess a total lack of understanding of history. Thanks. I love it when my characters quote my own reviews to me. Stories don't exist without conflict. I'm here to fight people and make poor decisions. So what sort of stupid choice should I make? Ted asks. I have no idea. All I've done is fill up a blank page with words. I still haven't thought of an idea yet. Isn't that your job? Yeah, actually. This whole experience has given me an idea. Ted's golden eyes brighten. I'm gonna save your bacon. Grease. The pun only works in this story if read out loud. It was my turn to facepalm. I need a plausible way to travel back to the past, Ted says. Maybe a time machine. Sadly, you're not an astrophysicist. No, you're right. That's another alternate history author. Yes, Ted winks knowingly. But to the point, if you're not a NASA scientist, that means I'm not one either, unless you want to spend the next few years researching thermal dynamics. So, you can't expect me to build a time machine, can you? No, of course not. Nor am I going to do that much work. I spent way too long the other day researching how tennis balls were made in the 18th century. It's much simpler narratively to have you steal someone else's time machine. It's the preferred method of travel for alternate history writers. That way, we don't have to explain how it works, just that it does. It's there. And apparently, security is very lax. Well, at least it beats travel by magic rock. A time machine shimmers into existence. White, round, sleek, and way overpriced. As if it were designed and sold at an Apple store. Accessories not included. Okay, Ted, here you go, a time machine. We've got the character, the means, and now we just need to know the when, so you can go back. I know just where to go, and it's not Greece. Yes?
You know, this is all a terrible, terrible idea. I can't believe you went through with writing it. But that's okay. I can fix it. Fix what? What's a terrible idea? Everything. The whole fourth wall shtick. The cheat of writing a story about writing a story. The shift in tone. The dumb jokes. I mean, it's just not good. I agree it might be a tad too meta. Maybe too on the nose, but it's fun, right? Don't worry. I'm gonna save you. I have an idea that will correct your drunken mistake. Hey, I've only had a finger's worth of whiskey. I look at the glass on the table. It's empty. So is the cheap bottle of Jim Beam beside it. Damn. Ted opens the door to the time machine and steps inside. Where do you think you're going? Get back here. With a whoosh, different enough from any other popular time machine to not get sued, the craft dissolves, disappearing into the void. Ted and the time machine are gone. Where did he go? A white light engulfs my writer's room, as if every LED light bulb inside burst with maximum brightness. My computer screen flickers. Damn. I've got a story to start, and a blank piece of paper in front of me. Let's give it a think. I wonder what to write. I gaze into the glowing void of the blank page. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard They Promised Trees by Elad Haber, with music by Fall Precautions, and The Story That Never Was by Brent A. Harris, with music by Fog Machine. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Come visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree or online at spacecowboybooks.com. Don't forget to subscribe, and visit us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.